because you only think you know the truth. You won't know if you don't listen. For a fresh take on the news, here's Anita Rufus.
Hi, this is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. Thanks so much for tuning in to my podcast. Columnist David Brooks, who writes wonderful columns for the New York Times, he wrote a column this past week called Five Gigantic Changes That Are Happening in America All at Once. And I want to start by going, okay, what happened 100 years ago in this country? In 1920, three very important things happened that truly shifted the culture in profound ways. 1920 was when the Negro Baseball League started so that black players had a chance to play, and some of them ended up being able to make it into great renown, including the incredible Satchel Paige. That was the year that the League of Nations, which was the predecessor to the United Nations, held their first meeting in 1920, and women got the vote. Now, it took a while until black women were able to get the kind of parity with white women, but nevertheless, women got the vote, and that is the only place in the Constitution, the amendment giving women the vote, where women are actually specifically mentioned in the Constitution. This is a big year, too. 2020, lots of changes are happening. And the first thing that David Brooks wrote as a gigantic change is that we are losing the fight against the COVID-19 virus. We seem to have just gotten tired, and we're giving up on fighting it. The stats on the virus are shocking, and they continue to get even more shocking. Just in 1 week, how much the numbers have changed, I won't bother you with the numbers, but it is staggering. And 19 states are now issuing mandatory mask orders with fines. And there are lots of cities and counties that are following suit because not enough people are doing enough to protect their neighbors. And we've reached the point on Friday of this week where the international number is approaching 11 million cases with more than 500,000 dead. And in the United States, we're starting to push closer toward 3 million cases with almost 130,000 dead. Remember the big deal about we reached 100,000? One of the things I've been saying all along, look, other countries took a countrywide approach. In Europe, in Asia, they did complete shutdowns of their economy and their society for almost 3 full months, and they brought their case numbers down. And when you look at our numbers compared with those countries, it is shocking how derelict our government has been in taking a real leadership role. If you will recall, the president decided it was up to the states. He didn't want to tell the whole country what to do. And he was real happy in the beginning to be able to parrot and herald the fact that the states that were having the worst results were run by Democrats. He made a big deal out of that, and he wasn't going to help them. The governors were on their own. Well, now the states that are experiencing the highest levels of cases and pushing that curve straight up in the air are Republican-run states. And now the president is just never saying anything against those states that are run by Republicans. But now the president is saying things like, well, you know, one of these days it'll just disappear. Talk about wishful thinking. Now, how did mask wearing become politicized? In some cases, it is, in fact, a racist underpinning. We are used to seeing the fact that, for example, in China and large parts of Southeast Asia, even before the virus, because the air was so bad, lots of people were walking around in masks all the time. Well, we didn't want to be like them. But in our country, anything can become a statement of political allegiance. If the other side likes it, then I think it's not good. And the president has pretty consistently insisted that the virus isn't that serious, we don't need precautions, people don't need to worry all that much, it's going to go away. Meanwhile, rising numbers in several of the red states run by Republicans are testing that premise. Now, to be fair, Republican governors in Texas and Arizona recently reversed course, and now they're letting local officials require masks inside businesses that they are allowing to remain open. It is important to note that in the United States, in the last 2 weeks, the number of confirmed cases has doubled. And then you have people like the governor of Nebraska, Governor Pete Ricketts. Talk about an idiot. He's told all the counties in Nebraska that they will not receive any of the $100 million in federal virus money if their customers are required to wear masks. The numbers coming out of Nebraska look fairly low, and it is not a densely populated state in any event. But there is no assurance that Governor Ricketts is actually putting out accurate information to begin with. But imagine counties that have a lot of population, that are experiencing high numbers of cases, are being told they won't get any of the federal money if they require their customers to wear masks. How nuts is that? And when I say, and I am saying this unequivocally, that the Trump administration, with regard to this virus, is beyond disgusting in the policies that they are putting out there into the world. We know that coronavirus attacks the lungs. There are a lot of people who have recovered from the virus who say their lungs feel like they're made of oatmeal. Well, meanwhile, a federal agency just halted funding for new lung treatments. This was quietly disclosed on a government website that the Trump administration has decided they're favoring the development of vaccines over spending money for specific treatments for the sickest patients. This is disgusting. Now, countries like Australia and New Zealand, South Korea, they've managed to buck the trend. They put a lid on the virus outbreak, and it is showing in the strengths of their currencies and their economies. New Zealand and Australia have been very effective in controlling the virus. They're ready to fully restart their economies. One of the reasons is they did total lockdowns very early on. They kept them in place nationally, with the leaders of their countries taking the lead in letting them know this is the way it's going to be so that we can get the result we need and save lives. Now, the European Union finally got their cases under control, also with very similar policies. Almost the entire society of the country of Italy was shut down. People weren't even supposed to leave their homes to go get food. Well, they've managed to level out their curves, and now they're barring travel from the United States. They've opened up their borders. They're now letting people cross from one country to another. They're letting in airline travel from, for example, Canada, which has done an incredible job of keeping that curve low. But they're barring American travelers because they can't trust the way our government has handled this and the fact that travelers from the United States are going to bring that virus back to their countries. We are now in the same category as Russia and Brazil in being unwelcome to go into European countries. Trump has received the lowest marks yet of his presidency for the way he has handled this virus. net approval of his leadership on combating the pandemic has gone 51%, a majority against him, 43% disapproval, and he is 8 percentage points underwater. They don't approve of his handling of this outbreak, and that's been a 22-point drop since the middle of March. 41% of the people who were polled said they strongly disapprove of the way the president has handled the coronavirus. And that's up 13 points in disapproval since mid-March. Meanwhile, with an election coming up in 4 months, can you believe it? A new poll, and almost every poll that's been coming out, shows that the Democratic presumed nominee, Joe Biden, former vice president, is leading Donald Trump nationwide by double digits, almost everywhere around the country. Look, when this all first started, the president had the opportunity to put into action that act that allows him to have the federal government tell private businesses that they need to do things for the defense of the country. It's the same kind of activity that was done, for example, in World War II, when car manufacturers were told they had to start making tanks, whatever. And that is what the president should have done. And my attitude is, if he had taken a positive stand on the fact that everyone needed to wear a mask. Yeah, sure, I know the naysayers say, well, even Dr. Fauci in the beginning said that not everybody had to wear a mask. Well, guess what? In the beginning, anyone with symptoms was told to wear a mask, but we needed masks desperately for healthcare workers. Even today, healthcare workers in some of the states that are now experiencing high numbers of cases, they're having to wear the same mask for more than one day in a row, let alone when they go from one room with a patient to another room with a patient. States and local governments needed help from the federal government. And one of the things that the president could have done, that I have been suggesting from the beginning, tell some companies they had to make appropriate masks, enough of them, hundreds of millions of them, that could have been distributed to every city and county in the country. There should be no one in any city, no matter how small, no matter how rural, that can't go to their local mayor's office or county courthouse or police department and get a free mask that is washable and reusable and at least would give them some protection and give other people some protection. These people who walk around going, well, you know, young people don't get it. Well, now the average age, the average age of people who are getting the virus is now in the 30s to 50s, not just the people above 80. He seemed to imply that only Democratic governor states were having a problem. But local governments in every single state have had to start laying off or furloughing thousands of their workers, and the numbers are likely to grow. Between 300,000 and 1 million public sector workers, teachers, nurses, police, could soon be out of a job or sent home without pay. This is going to affect education, sanitation, safety and health, potentially leaving critical public services in total disarray. And the federal government is dragging their feet on passing another stimulus bill that could, in fact, help cities and counties and states. Now, remember when Ronald Reagan said, government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. Well, it turns out that right now, with tens of thousands, in fact, approaching very soon 200,000 Americans dead. We've got millions out of work, more than 20 million at the last count. And we have turned to the federal government for leadership. So going from a president who said, government's not the solution, government is the problem, to a president who has said out loud, I don't take any responsibility at all. The truth is, this president doesn't take any responsibility for anything. He always finds someone to blame. He fires people because they have the gall to either talk back to him or say publicly that something is wrong. Government is only as good as the people who are running it. And this president has not appointed the best people. He has cycled so many people through the administration. He has so many that do not really have the authority to run their departments because they're in acting positions. And Americans now, by double-digit margins, say the federal government is doing too little to deal with the health and economic repercussions of this pandemic. The activist government that we need right now, support for that is the highest it has been in decades. Impact on the poor and minorities, we've heard a lot of statistics about this. In New York, for example, the death rate among African Americans and Latinos was twice as high as among whites. More than half of the workers who have lost income because of this virus were already below the federal poverty line. And did you hear? The president loves to talk about how African Americans ought to be supporting him because, after all, they've had the lowest unemployment rate, yada, yada, yada. Of course, they're in the lowest paid jobs for the most part. But having said that, he is doing nothing at this point to really protect them. And one of his proposals that he was hawking as being so proud of the difference it would make for Black Americans was that housing, he was going to try and put in place and support programs through the Department of Housing that would desegregate cities so that the poorest and mostly people of color were not jammed into small areas that we like to call ghettos, although we don't say that out loud all that often. Well, they're pulling back on that program now, and the president had the gall to say out loud this past week that the reason that he was pulling back on that program was because it represented a threat to suburbia. If you know what redlining is, it's where realtors and people who did zoning for cities used to draw the lines around certain areas in a city and say, well, those people can't live in that area. Even in my lifetime, there have been housing complexes that specifically had written into their guidelines that you couldn't sell that house to a person of color because we had to protect property values. And of course, if someone of color moves into your neighborhood, there goes your property value. That's what the president was basically saying, because polls leading up to the 2020 election show that, in particular, suburban white women are not supporting the president. So his message to them is, we're not going to try and desegregate neighborhoods and encourage the ability of people of color to move into your neighborhood because it means that your property values will drop. Meanwhile, that is not, in today's world, going to get him back those votes, except for the people who would have voted for him anyway because of, you know, they support the idea of protecting Confederate statues. Okay. I want to go over a couple of things that have happened, things you might not be aware of. There was an important abortion decision that came out of the Supreme Court, and Chief Justice Roberts sided with the precedent because the law from Louisiana had been modeled on one in Texas that was struck down just a few years ago. Because, this is the wording of the justification, because it would produce an undue burden on women seeking to terminate a pregnancy. Thank Justice Sandra O'Connor for that language. She was the first woman on the Supreme Court, and she's the one who, in a case after Roe, when lots of these restrictions were trying to be put in, she's the one who said, you can put certain restrictions on for the health of the person or to make sure things are done properly, but not if it places an undue burden on the woman seeking to terminate a pregnancy. And that was the justification upon which Justice Roberts sided with the more liberal justices in striking down that Louisiana law, which would have meant that there was maybe one clinic in the entire state of Louisiana where a woman could go. The Supreme Court also said they won't require Texas to let all eligible voters vote by mail. The Democratic Party and some voters had urged the court to reinstate a trial judge's injunction that required state officials to allow all voters, not just those 65 or older, to submit a mail ballot. Supreme Court struck that down, said no, they're not going to take that position. Meanwhile, an appeals court ruled that Trump illegally diverted defense money to pay for building his wall. Remember that? He said, oh, it's an emergency at the border, and therefore he can fiddle around with what Congress had appropriated for defense. Well, an appeals court said the administration does not have the authority to use military funding to pay for construction of a wall. However, I will say the Supreme Court just made it easier for future presidents to fire the heads of the Consumer Watchdog Agency. If you'll recall, that's the agency that was set up to oversee what financial institutions do after the horrible scandal that led to the recession in 2008. The court said that the structure of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is unconstitutional. It can keep operating. It needs some new rules, but it is not, in its current form, protected from future presidents. And finally, once again, a federal judge makes a difference. On asylum policy, you know that the president's been trying to limit people seeking asylum in our country. He said anyone who came through a second country to get here and didn't apply, for example, if they came up from Central America and they came through Mexico, but they didn't apply for asylum in Mexico before they came here to apply for asylum, then they were ruled out. A federal judge knocked down that policy. His ruling, now based on the virus that was quickly imposed to expel people who crossed the border and to block asylum seekers, this judge, appointed by President Trump, said, forget about it. You can't do that. You're playing games. People who come here for asylum under our existing laws and international law that we helped to write, they have to be allowed to apply for asylum. And by the way, the Supreme Court, in a wonderful ruling, wiped out the attempt of this administration to be able to start deporting DACA. The young people who were brought here as children, who had protection from deportation under the Obama administration, Trump wanted to throw that out, and the Supreme Court said, wait a minute, you're going a little too fast on that, and put some protection back in for those who are members of that group called DACA. Hey, listen, check out all of my podcasts. You can find them at iHubRadio.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for iHub Radio where you get your podcasts and then put in the Anita Rufus Show and my podcast will come up. And don't forget, by the way, there are 3 new episodes every week. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. And just remember, you won't know if you don't listen.